Hi there, this is episode number 270. Today I am talking to Nathan Platis. He is the VP of Operations for HiPages. Nathan has been based in Manila, Philippines now for the last 5 years, where he built the HiPages operations team from zero people up to about 140 people in a 2-year period. He managed huge growth and operational efficiencies during that time, so I regard him very much as an expert in this area. I really enjoyed talking to Nathan, and I'm sure you'll enjoy this podcast too. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/270. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff and suppliers across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer help make outsourcing easy, so consider them now. And if your BPO, clients or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to register.payoneer.com/OA or go to our website and we will have links there.
I came to the Philippines almost 5 years ago. So I worked for HiPages, obviously. And at that point in time in our business, we were looking to scale our business, but operationally, we just weren't capable of being able to deliver on what it is that the business needed to deliver on. And so we sort of explored a few different options, and the Philippines was most certainly at the top of our list. And so we came over here. I came over here with my CEO, and we did a bit of a discovery tour. And, you know, we spent, 5 days over here. And in that 5 days, I think it really cemented for us what was possible over here. We visited a number of different BPOs, and we listened to a lot of people on the phones, and we realized that what we want to do over here is certainly capable of being done, and being done at a third of the cost of doing it in Australia. So at that point in time, our physical office couldn't handle any more people. The business couldn't sustain, you know, any more cost in Australia necessarily for the vast number of people we needed to get in there. So we made the jump, and we sort of came over here. We set up a team. Our first team only had 10 agents and a team leader. And we were calling consumers on our platform to get a written recommendation for our tradespeople. So whilst that, you know, maybe is something that we could have done through the tech side of things, we had a goal of wanting to achieve 100,000 written recommendations, and we didn't have the tech capabilities nor the resources in that team in order to be able to do it. So we were doing it from 2 people in Sydney, and we ramped up to a team of 10 people over here, and they were super successful. At the end of the sort of 2-month mark, we decided that this was our way forward. And a couple of things happened. Number one is that, you know, I put my hand up to come over here and run it. And number two is we went from 10 sort of day one up to 114 at the end of the first year. And then we were at 140 by the second year. Wow. So we had a really steep pull of growth over the first couple of years. And, you know, we got excited about what was on offer over here, and we brought over about 8-9 different lines of business.
And, you know, so you did it a little bit differently. It'd be good to know what tipped you off to the Philippines, but typically people don't come over here before they set up the office. Why was it that you thought it was worth actually physically coming to the Philippines?
You know, primarily from a governance perspective, the CEO is a co-founder of the business. He has to report to the board. He is on the board. And at the end of the day, it was his reputation. So he needed to be able to go back to the board and say that he had the full confidence in being able to do it. you know, in his mind, it was never going to be a light engagement. He knew that we needed, you know, severe scale, and he knew that it was going to be more than 10. And so for him, it was important that he listened to everything from day dot.
Absolutely. And that reflects in how you set up. So you actually started the operation with 10 people, and then you very quickly grew from there. What were you expecting before you came over here? I imagine you were maybe thinking you could get the lowest, most basic jobs done. And then when you came over here, you were injected with a lot more certainty and enthusiasm for the true skill sets.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, from the very beginning, we went with a role that was going to be low impact. We went for a role that if it didn't work well, it wasn't going to kill our business at the end of the day, and it wasn't going to leave us with a sort of call it a bad customer experience or a brand, any brand reputation impact. And so that was the very first role that we brought over here. But, you know, very quickly after that, we saw that actually not everything, but most things are possible over here. And there's a few key things that we do when assessing a role in being able to bring it over to the Philippines. Number one is that we make sure that that role works in Australia or has worked in the past in Australia. It may not be a functioning role there now, but the role has to have a process that sits behind it, and it has to have been proven that it's capable of being done.
Right.
And the reason that's important is it's difficult to manage offshore teams at the best of times, but to give them something that you don't know if it works or it doesn't work becomes a lot more challenging to try and manage and lead people through something like that. So we pioneered everything in Australia. If we hadn't done that process before, we built processes around things, and then we brought it over here with a very sound process that sat behind all of it, and we knew how to train people on what that process was.
So you're effectively outsourcing your staffing requirement. A lot of people come over to the Philippines hoping to not only outsource their staffing requirement, but almost outsource their business processes and business problems. And it seems that you made the sort of, the delineation of this isn't actually kind of outsourcing the problems. You need to build the processes and structures first, and then you can staff them in the Philippines.
And I think that's an important point, because I have never looked at us as being outsourcing. I've looked at us in an offshore capacity. And the reason is that for me, the staff being over here, being culturally aligned to Hipages as a business was actually number one, and trying to almost separate them from who their BPO was and have them look at themselves as being Hipages employees, not through being a BPO employee, was something that was really important to us, because we wanted them to feel like they were a part of the team. Mm-hmm. We wanted them to feel as though they were a part of Hipages, because my view is that if you feel as though you're more a part of the company, you're going to service the customers a lot better, and you're going to be more emotionally attached to who that business is.
Absolutely. So I counsel people that, people are concerned of, you know, how do they get out of offshoring if it doesn't work? What are the clauses in the contract? But very commonly, instead of it not working out, it works incredibly well. And then people are sort of faced with a situation where they weren't necessarily designing something that would then have 10 or 100 or 200 people just a couple of years down the track. It seems as well with your organization, you know, this was a resounding success. And, you know, are there some things with high growth that you often sort of see, or you could kind of tell people to look out for?
Yeah, like things can very quickly spin out of control. With high growth came high attrition. So in the early days, when we were, you know, growing from zero essentially to 140 by the end of the second year, we had a lot of attrition. We had a very high turnover team. So industry standards is somewhere in 50 to 60%. And we were probably at that point in time sitting around 40, which was a lot higher than where we expected to be. But what we did was we really doubled down on engagement, and we knuckled down on the type of person that we wanted, and we refined the profile for the agents that we were bringing on board. And we were making sure that we were bringing on people that were capable of being able to do those roles, not just another bum on the seat. So, yes, the high growth brought a lot of attrition, but we still knew that we wanted to get lower attrition. And sort of today we've got less than about 12% attrition. And in an industry that's still operating at somewhere between sort of 50 and 60%, we're pretty happy with where we're at.
Sure. And there's a lot of factors involved in that, isn't it? It's about sort of solidifying your own culture, your own processes, but also when you're in the high growth stage, you're having to sort of scramble and do things, and maybe not everything is as consolidated as once you get a moment to really settle down and build the structures better.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I can add to that is the leaders in the team. So we haven't employed an external team leader. We've got 8 team leaders, and we haven't employed an external team leader now for close on 3 years.
Right. So you just promote from within.
Promote from within, train, develop, give people the opportunities to grow their careers.
Mm-hmm. So you started with customer service roles effectively. What have you expanded into, and where do you see opportunities for offshoring versus where would you recommend that, you know, offshoring is maybe not prioritized?
So we've brought some roles here. We've then taken them out from over here and sort of brought them back into Australia, but then sort of actually started bringing them back over here again. So I'll expand a little bit more. So look, 101 is customer service is done well, done better than I believe in Australia over here. So I think customer service in multiple facets is really great over here. Obviously, back of house sort of administrative stuff is really great. Anything that's got a very sound process behind it, where one doesn't need to think like really big laterally and have to make a lot of decisions on the fly, is something that I would say is absolute bread and butter over here. The roles that become a little bit more challenging are more technical roles and also sales roles. So we've got a few technical people. We've got some technical marketing people in SEO and SEM. We've got some technical people in data analysis roles, and we have some software engineers as well. The challenge we found with those is it takes a lot longer to recruit for them. So our recruitment cycle in those guys is typically 3 to 6 months, whereas for an agent, it's sort of, 2 weeks. A customer service agent, I should say. The area where we've sort of come in and out a little bit on the Philippines is in sales. When we first came over here, we saw that there were a lot of companies who were selling over here. But then within about 18 months, teams of 30 to 50 salespeople were completely let go. And there was no one left in their sales teams. We set up a very small sales team, but we didn't invest in the training and development of those people properly in the beginning. And it essentially failed. So we, out of the 15 odd salespeople that we had to begin with, we were left with one. But that was a little bit of a shining light that sort of came through. So that person actually just kept plugging away for 2.5 years. We then decided 2.5 years later to roll back and say, well, there's no such thing as a unicorn, right? We know that one person is capable of being able to do this thing over here. They were competing within the top 3 of a team of 12 in Sydney. And so we knew that that was something that if we work to invest more in, we could do over here. And if we found the right people to be able to do it, we could do it over here. And slowly over the last 12 months, we've now grown the team to 5. So it's taken a lot longer. We've had to put a lot more training, a lot more investment in bringing people over from Sydney to do a lot more training with them. But it's reaping the rewards because we've now got a team of 5 that are doing well. We still have a team in Sydney, and they're competing pretty well to the team in Sydney.
And where were the points of weakness then for the sales team? Was it the sort of cultural nuances of dealing with Australian tradies? Was it, maybe the fact that they aren't so assertive in terms of sales? where was the team falling down?
So the team was falling down is that they weren't able to think laterally enough through the conversations. Maybe they didn't have enough ammunition to be able to sort of play that the game with the tradie in order to try and win them. Everything over here is a little bit more black and white, and so like the argy bargy that comes along with sales sometimes and it doesn't really happen as much over here as what it can do in Australia, and the ability to relate to the person that you're trying to sell also doesn't happen as much. And that's sort of where it fell down in the beginning, and I don't think that they still necessarily have that entirely, but they have that enough to be able to get the tradies over the line to be able to sell them. Look, don't get me wrong, they're close to the team in Sydney, but they aren't as great as the team in Sydney. The team in Sydney seem to be able to step it up into another gear that the guys over here sort of tend to struggle with a little bit more. Look, we're able to give them things that it's still of benefit to the company, but we'll always still hold sales in Sydney as the primary place, really.
Right. So in you've been here 5 years now, you've built this team, you know, from zero to 10 people, then up to 140 people. You've been through thick and thin of this team. You've no doubt built all of the processes that they are now adhering to. You've no doubt done a lot of A/B testing. You know, and people try and encapsulate what offshoring is and how to effectively build and manage teams in outsourcing. Is it any different to managing and building a team in Australia, or is it completely different? How can you sort of encapsulate the sort of differences and similarities of just building and running a team?
So I think we first need to sort of split out what outsourcing and offshoring is, because they're two very different things. Mm. Outsourcing is really giving the responsibility of those KPIs, those SLAs, through to a third party, if you will. And it's their responsibility to ensure that those targets are being met. Our case was what I would refer to as offshoring, where, yes, we had a team, obviously, in the Philippines, but they still had myself over here who was leading that team. Now, I've been with hipages. I was with hipages, or I am with hipages, for 10 years before I moved over to the Philippines. So I had an immense understanding of who hipages was and how they operated. And one of the reasons I moved over here was that I was able to work across a number of different disciplines because of my vast experience within hipages. And I think that that's really what's helped a lot, is that I've been able to do a lot of cultural engagement with the people and get the people to really understand who hipages is as an organization, get them to sort of be aligned to the values, the mission, the vision of who we are as an organization in an offshore capacity, as opposed to an outsource capacity where they would want you to adhere to the BPO's vision and mission, right? Not the company that you're actually on the phone to the clients for. And I think that that's been a really big difference for us.
And how do you, because you are predominantly placed within a BPO, but you are effectively just managing that team. So I explain it to people that it's a little bit like a co-parenting situation, in that they're commonly, typically officially employed by the BPO. Although, you know, the identity and the culture and the day-to-day management is run by the client. Although then they're sort of... you know, it is a bit co-parenting, because they come into the office of the BPO. A lot of their sort of colleagues and who they see at the water cooler are from other accounts. So, you know, how do you see the complexities of having this almost dual identity for the staff?
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices.
We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
I think it's challenging for people, but I suppose that at some point in time, they need to be able to identify with who they are and who they're talking to. So I suppose we went over the top a little bit with it, particularly around T-shirts and lanyards and paraphernalia and, you know, branding up on the wall everywhere. And, you know, a very big thing, you know, in the Philippines is, you know, people refer to external companies as clients. So when they're in the BPO environment, they talk about their clients being high pages. And I was very big to, or very quick, I should say, to telling people not to refer to high pages as a client, but refer to themselves as high pages. So instead of saying high pages as a client, they say me or us, because that's who we are and that's our identity. And look, do I know 100% how people feel about it? The short answer is no. I'd like to say that people are more loyal to high pages now than they are to the BPO, but I suppose at the end of the day, you know, the BPO is the one that they've walked in the door and they've tried to be employed by, and they've been happy to be profiled to whichever particular account they want to be moving to. So I suppose it's an uphill battle for us. And I think that if you're in a captive environment, it's quite different. But I'll take the wins that I have to date about people feeling aligned and loyal to high pages, even if it's only in my heart, as opposed to, you know, the reality on the ground.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people respond actually to the day-to-day actions, you know, whether they're officially employed by X, Y, or Z, or, you know, I think the day-to-day actions actually determine people's loyalties and behaviors and things like that, don't they? So it's, you know, it's often the things that are put in place that determine the actions of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so if people are looking, you know, obviously with your operation, you really went like a sort of racehorse and quickly grew up to 140. Now that's quite an unusual situation. But if people are looking to offshore, if people are looking to build a team, what would you recommend the steps are? You know, would you recommend that everyone always comes over to visit first, or just get started with one person? What would you see as the sort of the guaranteed win of starting an offshoring exercise?
I think you need to, there's a stepping stone, there's a path. I think that if you're not wanting to move scale over to begin with, I think outsourcing your first few roles are probably important. So not moving to trying to bring someone over here too quickly, but if you've got a couple of roles to begin with, feel free and feel comfortable to outsource it. Take a couple of seats in a smaller organization where, you know, you don't necessarily want to be in an organization that's got, you know, 2,000+ people, because you're really just another name and a number. That was something that was important for us. We knew that we wanted to get to some sort of a reasonable size, you know, so we didn't want to go for businesses that had more than 15,000 people over here, because we really didn't want to be a name and a number. We prefer to be one of the larger accounts, if you will, as opposed to being one of the smaller ones. So if you're setting up, you know, anywhere from 1 to 5 people, go for a mid or lower size BPO that's maybe got 500 to 1,000 people, right? Because they're going to give you a little bit more special attention. The larger you get, the less attention you're probably going to get from anywhere to 1 to 5 people. Number two is then bring things over slowly. Don't try and push things too quickly. If it takes a year to double in size and it takes a year, that's okay. But make sure that you bring things over that you know will be successful, or you invest the time with the people to help them do it. I suppose the third biggest thing for me is bring your culture over here. Help the staff identify with who you are as an organization. Come over, meet them. From Australia, you know, you're looking at $1,000 return, you know, a few hundred bucks for accommodation. It's not the end of the world. You're saving a lot of money by having people over here. So don't not invest in the travel to be able to connect with the people the same way that you would want to connect with the people that are in your office. For us, we do monthly drinks with everybody. So end of month drinks, we go out, we have drinks, we celebrate. We do end of month awards. We also do two bigger parties. So that's a thing that we do in Australia. So we do an end of financial year party that we run in July, and also an end of year party that we run in December time. Those parties have been super successful. We hand out a lot of awards. The guys really love it. We always bring the CEO and a few other executives over from Sydney at the same time. To be able to connect with people, we do, you know, strategy roadshows. We make sure that everybody is very visible, and make sure that everybody has the opportunity to connect with people.
Fantastic. And what would you, just going back to the facilities, to the BPO facilities, you know, I think there's not so much clarity over exactly what a BPO does, what they don't do, what they should be doing. And then also, you know, there's people, very rightly so, considering just building a remote team, working from home, not necessarily paying all of the official government taxes and things. What would you suggest is of critical value within a BPO or outsourcing supplier? And how do you choose a good one?
So a couple of really basic things. Good internet. So internet in the Philippines at time is a bit average. It doesn't have fantastic cheap internet. So making sure that, my view is that having people work in an office is always better than having people work at home, because the internet domestically can be very, very, very average. Commercially, it's expensive and people need to invest in having good internet. I wouldn't be going with a BPO that had less than two internet connections. Mm-hmm. Very technical thing, but it's a very important thing. Number two is a good building. There is a lot of sort of Z grade, if you will, buildings over here, and having people in a nicer facility is very important. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to cost more money. There's a lot of BPOs over here that have good scale, which means that they can actually offer a seat or in a facility that's much better than a much smaller business at a reasonable price. The third thing is that, and this is a personal thing for me, is that someone has their own desk, you know, so that they have a sense of belonging, they have a sense of their home, if you will. There's a lot of desk sharing that goes on over here, and, you know, just paying that little bit extra to say that that person has a dedicated desk, knows that they can pin photos up of their family, and that's their home for their, you know, 8-9 hours a day that they're in the office for. And for me, that's really important.
And probably the absolutely most important. Yeah, and it all contributes towards that culture, doesn't it? And just to give the staff a sense that they're a part of your team, they're being looked after, and their interests are aligned with the interests of the company.
Correct.
Good. And so we have met socially, and you know, there's a lot of communities around the BPO and outsourcing community. You know, can you describe to people what the sort of outsourcing BPO community is like in the Philippines, and how this industry has contributed to what the Philippines is now today?
So there's somewhere between 110 and 130 million people in the Philippines. There's maybe somewhere between 15 and 20 million people that live in Manila. And they say that there's about 1.3 to 1.5 million people employed into this industry. This industry generates about $25 billion for the country every year. It's the largest or second largest contributor to GDP, along with OFWs, overseas foreign workers. So it's got a big spot in the Philippines. It is a very well-paying job. It's created a pseudo middle class in the Philippines, and it's a job that a lot of people are to aspire to get into. And there is a lot of talent around of people that are constantly wanting to join the industry. So it's, you know, in Australia, it's not such a great glamorous thing to be in a call center anymore, but over here it is. It's a big thing to be able to get into a call center and to be able to support your family. Mm-hmm. So it means a lot to people.
And also to be working, you know, very closely with Australian firms, American firms. It really is quite exciting for these sort of the younger generation. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the benefit of being Australian or working for an Australian business, I should say, is the hours of work. So America is obviously working graveyards. Australia works a day shift. Typical start is somewhere between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m., which is really great for people from a traffic perspective. It also means that they finish early. So they're finishing at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon so that their commute home is not as bad as it would be if they're finishing at 5 or 6 p.m.
For sure. And what is it with Australia and outsourcing? Really over the last sort of 5 to 10 years, it's really come leaps and bounds, isn't it? And, you know, the beginning of outsourcing was founded by the US, which, as you mentioned, is fully graveyard shifts. It was predominantly very sort of standard call centers. And now the explosion over the last 5 to 10 years has been, a lot of different countries. Australia's come in strong, but also then a lot of different professions and higher value activities. How do you see offshoring outsourcing from an Australian perspective? And are businesses in Australia waking up to it more quickly now?
I think it's very simple, right? So recently there was a study in Australia has the highest minimum wages in the world. Mm. That's unsustainable. The cost of living in Australia is too expensive. You can't just keep increasing your fees on consumers in order to cover your cost as a business anymore. Everybody's obviously in business to make money. You have shareholders that want to be getting a return on their investment. And so the short and the very blunt truth is it's too expensive to only have staff in Australia now. So my belief is that people, if you haven't already, you need to start outsourcing in order to reduce some of your costs. Even if it's, one customer service person, there's an extra $50,000 there that you have to reinvest into different things in the business or put it back into the owners of the pockets of the shareholders. We recently have gone to market to try and employ sort of call it a tier 3 or tier 4 customer service person in Sydney. And it took us about 4 or 5 months. Mm. It's just not a desired job for people anymore. People don't want to be doing that as a career. The money that they can get for that in Australia is not really enough for them. Whereas you can come over here and pay a quarter or a tenth or a fifth or whatever it is, and people are super happy to have that job and will work, doubly as hard for it. So look, my view is really simple. If you haven't already, you need to explore it. And if you do already have it, then you need to look at what else you can do.
Yeah, yeah. And it is hard. We often talk about running teams and building teams in the Philippines, and it is fraught with complication and difficulty, but that is actually, it's business, isn't it? It's difficult to build teams in Australia and the US to balance, obviously budgets, but also to get the right people on the bus. It's complex and it's ever changing, isn't it? And I think sometimes we sort of lose the forest for the trees in that, we're in the Philippines and discussing how difficult it is to build successful teams, but it's just the nature of building and expanding businesses.
Yeah, look, I would really agree with that. And I really share your thoughts that it doesn't matter where you are, it's hard to build it. But I really can't emphasize enough that just because you've found a cheaper resource in a different country that you can't not take some of that money and reinvest it into travel and connecting with the people over here as well.
Mm, absolutely. And where do you see, just on the last point, the friction with remote-based teams? Obviously, I think we'd all agree that if it wasn't for the discount, if money wasn't necessarily an issue, you would ideally have everyone in the same office in the headquarters. But obviously there's a huge opportunity to access fantastic resources at a cheaper price. But where are the points of friction? Is it with communications? Do you see concerns or a lot of prospective people see concerns in terms of security, really knowing that people are working, and then sort of conveying the culture across the airwaves. What have you come across as maybe the main points of friction?
Look, I think the not being able to walk up to somebody's desk and be able to have a chat with them, and maybe keeping them in the loop of what's going on. So those water cooler, those corridor conversations that you would typically have sort of in your home office don't tend to make their way over to a remote office as well. And look, I think the important thing that you need to remember with all of that stuff is you need to double down on it, right? So something that we've done recently here is we have TVs or you know, large screen computers in every single office. We've got Zoom, so somebody can walk into a room, they can start up a meeting, and they can have a video conference with our team in Sydney, right? So they use the same booking platform to book a room, be it in Sydney or in Manila, and they can connect in with the Sydney team very easily. So it's about reducing the friction to have a video conference and see somebody's face and to be able to gauge a reaction from them that I think is what's helped us reduce some of the friction. And look, that didn't happen day one. That didn't even happen after sort of 2 or 3 years. That's something that's happened over time that we've realized is really helping. And so we obviously continue to double down on that stuff that helps.
Well, thank you so much, Nathan. You've been over here 5 years and you're really an expert in your field now in terms of managing operations, building teams. I really appreciate your insight.
Thanks, Derek. It's been an absolute pleasure.
That was Nathan Platis of HipAges. If you want any of the show notes regarding this episode, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/270. And as always, if you want to send us an email, then just email us at ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.